Good evening, everyone. It's Sunday night. It's the Fat Back Four, and it's episode 9, and woohoo! 3-0 to Liverpool. Thank God. Thank God there's nothing to talk about. The usual crew are here. Matt, Ian and Grizz, and myself, Gav, your host, as usual. Right, straight to it. Liverpool 3, Huddersfield 0, and sure, there's nowhere else to kick off but the team selection. Grizz, I'll come to you first. I thought it was a little bit surprising what he done. You know, Mignolet and Lovren in particular, but we'll get back onto Lovren in particular later. But were you surprised by the lineup?
I was, Gaff, I was. You try not to, you know, I often preach, so to speak, often preach like you support the shirt. So whoever dons the shirt, you support, you know, at the end of the day, he picks the team and who gives a fuck who's playing as long as we get 3 points. But that selection did surprise me, did shock me. I mean, even though at the start of the week, we all thought, right, he's dropping Mignolet and Lovren next week. I did kind of think he's probably going to allow Mignolet to come back into the team or stay in the team, sorry. But I did really think he's going to drop Lovren. Up top, he went with a surprise. I didn't think he's going to pick Sturridge. I thought Ox was a certainty to start. Do you know what I mean? Because like his last few substitute appearances have been decent. You know, he's looked lively last couple of appearances. So I'm not gonna sit here and say, look, I wasn't concerned with that lineup. I was at the start of the week. I thought we're gonna win 3-0, and I did say that in the WhatsApp group. I don't know if you guys remember. You won't. But when I saw the lineup, I thought, okay, this is gonna be a long, arduous 90 minutes. And so yeah, I was a bit worried with that lineup, but it all worked out all right in the end.
Yeah, it did work out all right. But Ian, I'll come to you next. When I looked at the lineup, you know, the Mignolet and Lovren stuff stood out and did for the whole week, and you had Klopp come out and make some positive kind of comments about the two lads that caused uproar. But it was other areas of the pitch as well, I thought, like Chris has touched on, that surprised me when it came to the team selection. But when you looked at it, I think you were a bit kind of thrown by it, weren't you? But like you said, you know, you look, you support him come 3 o'clock.
Yeah, of course, mate. I mean, I was blown away by the team selection, to be honest. I thought, what has Oxlade-Chamberlain got to do to get a game for Liverpool? If you spent 40 million or whatever it was on him, like yesterday was the perfect opportunity to give him a go. He's done well in his last couple of appearances off the bench. I was just amazed he wasn't starting. And then obviously you've got Lovren, Mignolet. I thought the midfield, he didn't really shake it up at all. But like you've just pointed back to there, what I said on Twitter was, that's not the team I'd have went with, but it doesn't matter now because the team that is out there is out there, so let's support them. And if we win at the end of the day, then he's made the right decision. And you can't really argue with the 3-0 win. So it's not how I'd have done it. It's probably not how you'd have done it. But 3-0, you'd have bit the hand off for that before the game. So fair play to stick. You don't get to where Klopp's got in his career with listening to outside influences. And obviously he doesn't listen to Twitter. But I mean, he's got to be strong-minded, hasn't he? Got to be. He's got to think, right, I know what these players are capable of. I know Mignolet had a fucking stinker the other day. I know Lovren's this. I know Moreno, whatever. I know Sturridge. Whatever, it doesn't matter. He's got to have his own opinion on these players. No matter how much he's helped by his assistants and all that, he's still the one whose head's on the chopping board, basically. So fair play to him for having a set of nuts and sticking with it. Because I said to someone on Twitter before the game, it doesn't matter who he picks as long as we win. And he went, no, that's not right. He should have dropped them. And I went, so it's more important that he picks the side you want and we lose. And he just didn't answer me. And that's basically what you're dealing with after time. People just want to be right. They don't want to be happy. They want to be right. Luckily for us, we were all unhappy with the team selection. But by 90 minutes, I'd say 99% of us were very happy. So job done.
Yeah, no, fair point. You're right, what you're saying. Klopp doesn't get to where he gets to without, or by listening to outside interference. And like you said, he's not going to listen to Twitter, but you had like pros and ex-pros coming out and absolutely lashing Liverpool players all through the week. And that's their job for some of them. Some of them are just sticking their oar in because they're fucking arseholes, to be honest. Matt, when you looked at the team, like Ian said, he doesn't know what Oxlade-Chamberlain has to do to get a game, but was the Sturridge one, was that a little bit of a surprise to you, or what was it? Maybe I'm taking Firmino a little bit out of the firing line and not putting him centrally, you know, letting him have a bit more freedom around the pitch and not being so much in the spotlight.
I don't think it was that, to be honest. I think he was more reverting to how we played at the back end of last season when Sturridge came in and you put them both up top. Because although, even though Firmino starts on the left, he wasn't there basically the whole game. That was just covered by Moreno and his running. So you could see as well in the build-up play, Gomez sitting almost as a back three. If he was getting forward, then he was covered by Milner and Hendo. I think he kept it a lot stronger at the back when we were going forward. It wasn't as gung-ho, or we at least had three people back covering every time. And then we just ground them down. Because at the end of the day, every single one of their players is worse than our players. So if you just keep your confidence, and they all kept it cool, and you just kept the confidence, keep it going. And in the end, he was just confident in everything that he sees in training, and that's why he went with that selection.
Yeah, you're probably right. And like you said, Firmino probably was more central than the lineup suggested when it came out. But look, into the game itself, Matt, I'll stay with you. And when you look, we probably take the first half as a whole because there wasn't much incident in it. There was a couple of nice bits and pieces, but nothing where you thought, oh, that was amazing. And were you surprised at how Huddersfield played? Because we heard a lot throughout the week about, oh, no, these lads don't lump, but these lads are confident on the ball and they take responsibility for the ball and they play football. But they literally went out, didn't they, and they decided, no, this is the way we're doing it. We're going to just frustrate. And they got the first half out of the way fairly handy, didn't they?
They did, but they didn't create anything either, because they probably looked at a lot of teams that come to Anfield and said, how do we beat these? And that is usually the way to do it. And they just didn't have anything on the break. And it may be because of what I touched on earlier, where we were sitting back more and we did have the three men to cover. So when you do have like a Jamie Vardy or Harry Kane running past, it's not just one-on-one. We had a couple of men to cover. So we stifled any attacks and counter-attacks that they had, which is good of Klopp, because that's our one weakness. I mean, we're never torn apart by great play, other than City, but we were down to 10 men. It's never like we were dominated in possession for full games. We're fucked every time on the counter-attack. So leaving them three at the back, or having someone a little bit more aware, like Milner sitting next to Henderson, I wasn't the happiest of getting selected, like, but it done a job, and it done the exact job we need. So although they might have gone in quite happy, that wasn't their game plan at all, because I can't remember how many shots they had. Was it one, two, maybe, maximum?
Two, I think.
Yeah. So they wouldn't have gone in happy. I think we would have gone in the happier team. Klopp thinks, all right, 0-0, we'll stifle them. They've got nothing. We can just turn off a bit now, get a few more runs going, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, no, Ian, I'll come to you next. I think Matt makes a brilliant point there. Instead of us going out and going gung-ho and being left with two centre-halves that are probably really low in confidence, and in Henderson, a defensive midfielder that looks off the pace for me, we did kind of structure our play a bit better. We moved as a unit, but we covered each other a lot better, and we're probably a little less offensive, but, you know, it probably suited the game, even though they were so defensive. But when you looked at it, were you wondering, when, as the first half went on, Firmino, Sturridge, whoever else is on the pitch, but we're going to need runners, we're going to need something. Were you worried as to where we're going to get this opening from as the first half progressed?
Yeah, I was. I thought we were horrific as a attacking force in the first half. Matt's right, we did keep going to three at the back. Gomez is really developing into a very good defender at the moment. His distribution was shocking first half, even second half, to be honest. But I think in a couple of years he's going to be a top centre half if he carries on progressing. So I like to see him drop into the back three, because I think that's where he'd be better. He'd be perfect as a right-sided centre back, I think, in the future. But going forward, I've said it quite as much as I like Sturridge, I would never pick him for Liverpool. His finish was tremendous in the second half, but he just doesn't offer anything in like the build up, or he never wins it back. He frustrates me. He really does. I think he needs to be a superstar in a smaller side now. I don't think he's good enough to lead the line for us. But the midfield three were all like for like, all quite similar. I've been talking for weeks about us needing someone to transition the ball from midfield to attack. I didn't think we were doing that. Huddersfield obviously came with a game plan because they've seen what certain teams do to beat us, and it's just keep it as tight as you can and you'll get a set piece or something in the 80th minute, something along those lines. I think that was their game plan. But Klopp, he did, like Matt said, he did set up a little bit differently. He didn't go as attacking as he usually does, and I think that surprised Huddersfield a little bit because you can't counter-attack a side that aren't attacking as much. You take that away from them. So, and David Wagner, however you pronounce his name, he's another exponent of what Klopp does, from the same school of football. So he's wanting to gang and press himself. So I think Klopp's just preempted how he's going to play, if you know what I mean. But, I mean, we'll come on to the second half in a minute, but first half I thought, when it got to half time, I was like, oh, this is bad. There was clearly no confidence in the 11. The crowd was very quiet. And I just thought, all in all, I just thought it was an awful game. First 45 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And I think, Grizz, when you look at it, to me, and I don't know if you agree, but it looked to me like two teams adapting. Liverpool adapting to the way they were playing. You know, the way Liverpool were playing themselves, were trying to adapt that kind of not so gung-ho and trying to cover each other against Huddersfield, trying to adapt to a team where they were expecting to be attacked heavily, but weren't, and Huddersfield looked a bit shocked by that. Do you agree with that? Do you think that two teams were trying to adapt to things in the first half, and that one made mostly for what can only be described as a really poor first half?
I think it was more to do with sort of our current mindset, our form, isn't it, going into this game. Normally we expect a gung-ho blitz start, don't we? But it was very apparent in that first 45 minutes that there was far more cautiousness to our play. And even though Klopp alluded to it after the game that he was surprised at how many players we had behind the ball in our attacks. Normally we're very gung-ho. It was definitely three centre-backs. Gomez tucked in nicely along them three. And I think even with the Lovren last-minute change, Clavin looked shaky for that first 20 minutes. You know, the Henderson was poor. I think Gini took a really bad knock, didn't he? I think he was sort of slightly unconscious for a little while. That affected his rhythm as well. So just the general midfield, you know, it was definitely a bit cautious behind the ball. We didn't see Gini and Milner sort of going ahead of the ball, making runs. Again, only Salah looked really lively in a couple of bits, even though he missed the penalty, which I don't think he should have took in the first place. Again, Salah was our only output. The only thing that kept me positive, even though I agree with Ian, I wouldn't pick Sturridge as well, you know, at the moment for Liverpool. But the only thing that sort of I had a bit of hope in my heart was the fact that Firmino was playing closer to him. Firmino wasn't playing on the left. Firmino and Sturridge were almost playing. It was almost like a 3-5-2 with Salah and Mourinho as the wingbacks and Bobby and Sturridge up front. But the three in midfield were very static in the first half. I thought in the second half it became more of a 3-1-4-2, whereas just Henderson sat and then the other four was given, like especially Gini and Milner, they really picked up their games in the second half, really bombing and getting into the box. But the only thing that kept me going for that first half, Gav, sorry, back to your original point, was the fact that, you know, Sturridge and Bobby, the fact that Sturridge had someone around him playing close to him, sort of, you know, Bobby was collecting the ball deep. I always thought, you know, if we can get a chance for Sturridge, you know, he may finish, because the build-up play, there was nothing. There was no, you know, he was not connecting the play. There was no hold-up play. Bobby was okay, nothing special. But, yeah, that first half was one to forget. And I think it was just the current mindset we're in, the coming back off, you know, the Spurs. We were going to be cautious, but I didn't expect us to be that cautious.
Yeah, no, it was a more cautious look to it. And I think it's only to be expected, you know, after what happened last Sunday and the week that's gone on, and you know, there's been a lot of talk from all quarters about Liverpool and the mentality and the way they play and how open they are. You know, they've got battered from pillar to post. Some of it justified over the last week. But I think the one thing that stuck out for me for the whole of the first half especially was we weren't attempting anything. It was very safe, and it suited Huddersfield, because with us being that safe, Huddersfield could just stay in a structured 4-4-1-1 or whatever it was, and you know, they could snuff out any danger because we weren't risking anything. But look, enough for the first half, into the second half, and an early goal was crucial. A goal in the first 15 minutes of the second half was absolutely crucial for this game, because as you know, the longer it goes on, the more nervous the team get, the fans get, and you know, that's not a good mix. But Matt, I'll come to you. We go 1-0 up through Sturridge. The minute the goal escapes me now, but it was definitely in the first 15 minutes of the second half. It was quite early in the second half, actually. And okay, we were a little bit lucky with the build up, but it was a top finish, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's everything Daniel Sturridge is, isn't it? I mean, we all know he's a brilliant, absolutely brilliant finisher. The issue with Sturridge now is it has to be perfection for him. So if that ball is like causing him to change direction quickly, or he has to battle someone to get there, or anything like that, then I don't think he scores it. The fact that he's running along, it's into his path, he can take a touch up and then finish it. It's everything he wants in a ball, and he will always score them. That is Daniel Sturridge through and through. The issue with him now, how I see it, is it's the non-perfect balls. The balls that other people will score, he's struggling to. Like, in the area, if it's to his chest or, like, you know what I mean? He hasn't got that touch anymore. It has to be there, and he will always finish. It's the other bit of his game, which is the worry.
Yeah. I agree with most of what you said there with regards to if he has to change direction. For me, it's if he has to push himself and he has to go into that, you know, what would you call elite kind of sprinting that worries me, that he's slightly off it. But Ian, the finish is really, really good. It's really clever in what he does. But like Matt said there, is there an argument for Sturridge? You know, the way people say, oh, he should play between the lines of the box. Is there an argument for Sturridge to never be, always be, you know, ahead of the ball and between the goalposts at this stage? That's where you want them. None of this dropping off, because that's what's going out of his game. Is there an argument for that to say, listen, you stick between those goalposts and you never come deep, stay up there, and we want you in the box for finishing, and that's it? Is that where his game has got to now?
There's an argument for that, but it's not an argument that that we want for our side. That's what I mean. That's what I said before. I think he needs to be a superstar, like the biggest fish in a small pond now. So he would score a lot more goals if he didn't have to like lead the line and chase back and link play up and stuff like that.
That's what he did in 13-14, like, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He's a tremendous finisher. That finish is world class. You know what I mean? It oozes class. There's no doubt about him that he's still got that in him. His technique is flawless in certain situations. But like Matt said, it's the other aspects of his game. He frustrates the life out of you. Klopp wants him to play in a way that he's not comfortable, and he's not going to adapt, and his body won't allow him to adapt. So he just doesn't suit Liverpool's style of play. Now, I know that sounds harsh, because he's just scored an excellent goal, and if Bobby gets the square, when he cuts it across the box after, I think it was Henderson's pass, he scores an easy tap-in. So he could have got two goals and been dog shit, but I still think that his goal just papers over the cracks with him, if I'm being honest. I just don't think he's good enough anymore in terms of what we're after. Put him in a Spurs side, even put him in an Everton side, put him in a side that creates chances, even a Swansea, someone like that, I think he'd be sound. But what Klopp wants, he can't provide, in my opinion.
Yeah, I said it the other week. If you put him in the team up there and ask him, which I think Klopp is, to do Firmino's job, which is come deep and link the play, I think he's shite. But if you put him up there next to Firmino, so he doesn't have to do that, then he'll get your goals. But yeah. can we carry him? That's the issue.
I actually think Sturridge wants to play as a 10 now. I think he fancies himself as a deep lying striker. But it's not going to happen at Liverpool.
No, he can't have that. He's not good enough.
I think that's what he'd like, though.
Grizz, you know what? I'll come to you now. But like, Ian's at the talking about that. And he's saying in a Swansea or in an Everton. I don't agree. I don't think Swansea or Everton have enough of the ball.
Enough chances for him, and are far enough
up the pitch and dominating enough for him. He needs to be in a team that are dominating games. Now, as good as we are in games, we don't dominate a lot of games. A lot of our games is like a game of tennis. It's back and forward, and he has to do an awful lot of moving backwards to get into the shape and then try to get forward. You know, when I look at Sturridge now, you probably look at it seriously, and I'm not joking. He'd probably be better off in the likes of a Barcelona, where they're constantly on the attack and penning teams in, where he's using that energy just to be constructive with it. You know that way.
Can I just say before Chris answers there, it's not their style of play that I think suits him. It's the fact that he'd be the best player at their side that it suits him. If you know what I mean, it's a mentality thing with him now. I think he needs to have it built around him, and he's not going to get that at a bigger side. I know what you mean by Barcelona, and he'd do well at Arsenal as well, probably.
Arsenal is the pick for me, yeah.
He creates so many chances. But I'm talking for his own mental stance. I think he needs to be the centre of attention.
I think he's better on a break at like a Leicester. Imagine him instead of Vardy. That's the type of team I see him in.
Yeah, I can't see him running like Vardy does.
No, it's a Leicester play a physical game. He would not. That's his problem.
Can't do anything.
Arsenal is just perfect. Ozil and Sanchez laying on a plate for him because in my opinion, everyone's got their own opinions on Sturridge's best asset, right? In my opinion, Sturridge's awareness of where to be around the penalty box is, in my opinion, he's got a natural, you know, people talk about natural instinct. Even the goal he scored, right? I don't know if Bobby would have been in the end of that, reading that play, or Dominic Solanke maybe. I don't think none of our other strikers would probably have read that. I mean, it looked simple enough, but you often see Sturridge getting on the end of back passes, sort of, you know, passes that go short. You know, he's like that. He's got this instinct, knack of being there. The goal, it did paper over the cracks. His performance was not very good. But the reason why I got excited at the end of last season, and this is what's, again, it comes back to Klopp's, you know, game plans. It's quite baffling because where we got excited last season with Sturridge was when he played up top with a partner. Every time he played with Origi, they looked fantastic together. Every time he played with, you know, Firmino, whoever it was, you know, and we thought, okay, with Phil dropping in deep, centrally, Sturridge with a partner, this could be fireworks. But it hasn't panned out that way. Now, if this was a strategy that he's picked for this game, then we've got to give more credit to Klopp. Because if that was his, and obviously it was now, because when we looked at the team and I thought Bobby to the left, Salah on the right, and then Sturridge up top on his own. With that midfield three static, I thought, we're going to bloody struggle here. Absolutely, we're going to struggle. But as I said, even though our passing and our general coordination of our play in that first half was pants, it was proper pants. It was almost like the Roy Hodgson days. I'm not joking, guys. It was that bad, right? But the only thing that I kept thinking of, thinking Bobby and Sturridge, there might be a connection there. They're playing up top together. And, you know, Sturridge's finish, look, his finish is sublime. It made it look so, so easy. He has that ability to do that. But he's got to play with most of us, I think, agree. He's got to play in a two to make it work at Liverpool. Now, I don't know if Klopp's willing to, you know, do that every time he picks Sturridge.
Yeah, I don't think he will play in a two. I don't think it's Klopp's way. The only hope he may have is if I don't know, if January comes, next season comes, and Sturridge is still there, and Klopp decides to go back to what was considered his favourite formation, which was a 4-2-3-1, which is different to this 4-3-3 we're playing. You get that 10 a lot closer to the front man, and it may wolf him. But look, he got the goal, he got the opener. We were all, you know, it was more relief on my part. I don't know how you felt, but it was more relief that we got that opener, and it meant Huddersfield had to come out. Ian, we get the second, we go 2-0 up, and it's from a bleeding corner. I didn't know what was going on, you know. But it was good to see Firmino get a goal, wasn't it? And it was great to score him a set piece.
Yeah, it was. I thought he had a good game, Firmino. One of the best things about him, even when he's not playing that well, he's always involved, isn't he? He's always working hard for the team, and I think that's why he's so... I reckon playing with him must be brilliant, because he's a pure workhorse as well. But when it goes for the corner, is it Firmino that should score just before that? I can't remember, but he should yes. score. Not. Oh, no, it's when he squares it to Sturridge, isn't it? Is that when he just balls it up? I can't remember, but we should have scored, or he should have done better just beforehand. So I'm glad he got that goal. It's poor marking, because he's not the biggest Firmino, and he doesn't even have to jump. He heads it from a standing position, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's that bit of movement, though, isn't it, at the front post? That
yeah, it's very good movement, Lee. And yet it is surprising, because we are terrible from corners, attacking-wise. I mean, Matip should have scored two. He missed an absolute sitter, the first one. So...
Yeah, but he's got a head shape like a 50p, you know what I mean?
Do you know what, though, mate? In the Bundesliga, he used to score quite a few goals, though.
Piss-easy chances, they were, yeah.
As Liverpool
players, he used to score headers. Yeah, he used to score like 5, 6, 7 goals a season in the Bundesliga. I mean, I've just plucked those figures out the air, but he definitely did score.
We used to score loads.
He's never scored. Guaranteed he's never scored, right?
but he was known for it, you know what I mean? So, and he should have scored a couple. But yeah, it's a good goal. It set pieces are a massive part of football. Like, teams like West Brom, they only survive by set pieces. So, if Liverpool can never score from them, then we're at a disadvantage straight away, aren't we? So it's nice to see us finally fucking get a goal from one. I wouldn't be surprised if we scored a couple of headers in the next couple of games now, because it's like opening the floodgates, you know what I mean?
It's mad. We used to be proper boss at them as well. Like, even
Sammy Ifeanyi was just a monster, wasn't he?
Even Skirtle. Under
Gerrard.
Yeah,
We were good under Gerrard, because Gerrard was... Because, you know, that McAllister delivery was probably the best delivery we've had. I don't think anyone's matched that delivery since, have they?
No.
I mean, his set pieces were sublime, spot on.
I think Gerrard was wasted taking set pieces. I think he was one of our best headers at the time. He should have been in the box.
Absolutely, Matt, yeah.
Go on, what are you saying, mate?
So,
no, I was going to say, Sorry, go on, Gav.
No, you're okay, Grace. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, do you know we were talking about our set pieces and everything. I said it last week that, you know, we need to score more goals from set pieces, and You could say even the Sturridge goal was a scrappy goal, like, you know, opportunist type goal. Do you remember, Ian, I was saying, like, you know, we don't score enough goals in sort of out of nothing. It doesn't have to
be. No, I don't remember. I don't remember that at all.
No, of course not. No, you've had a rough week. You're not going to remember.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It was good to see. We actually looked threatening. I mean, I don't know what's Huddersfield's record for defending set pieces or what they're like normally.
Or shite if we score one.
We made them look like Liverpool on set pieces, because we looked threatening on every... I think we got the penalty on a set piece as well, wasn't it? I think it was a cross or a free kick or something.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and Matip should have scored at least two, in my opinion. We actually looked threatening from set pieces,
technically it was my opinion.
That's
the
opinion as well, funny enough.
I can't remember who's taken our set pieces.
Is there an argument? Is there an argument to say, because Huddersfield have been quite good this year, and I was slightly disappointed with them, but is there an argument to say that David Wagner was a bit, he felt like he was in Klopp's shadow a little bit? You know what I mean? Do you reckon he lost a bit of his usual...
swagger?
I'm not sure what the word is, but I think maybe...
He's used to being the number two, so he didn't have the confidence, maybe. I don't know. It just, he didn't seem to be up for it as much as they have been in recent weeks.
Do you know when we take the piss out of Steve Bruce bending over for Alex? Do you remember we used to always say that? And like Mark Hughes and everything. You know, I'm sure there was loads of accusations of like, oh, fucking Wagner's going to just, you know, bend over for Liverpool just to shaft him. And it did seem that way. You've got a point there. They did look a bit sort of slightly apprehensive, do you know what I mean, overall maybe, or slightly in
I think he just felt a little bit inferior, because he'd always been Klopp's right-hand man, if you know what I mean, and not the main man.
My argument would be, didn't expect Klopp to come out and play like that at all. I think he expected Klopp to go for us, a big angry reaction and go for from last week and go for go
yeah
for
there's some of that as well.
It didn't happen and it threw them a little bit, but Matt, before Grace came in and told us Ian's opinion, I wanted to ask you, this goal for Firmino, he got a bit of grief last week over his performance, and he wasn't really in the game and stuff like that. Maybe he didn't need the goal, but I don't think it can do him any harm, can it? You know, just another goal, notch another one, and, you know, he goes again now, rather than having that, like everyone, having that Spurs kind of performance hanging over him. I think it'll do him a world of good.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Anyone who's playing up on that top line, a goal does so much for the confidence, and especially like a nice one like that with a nice little bit of movement before it. And it was a good header as well, strong header down. It was everything he needed to do. So yeah, he's going to be, I mean, Brazilian players love it anyway, so he's going to have a little bit of a flair going forward. He didn't score since that penalty miss, did he? Was it Sevilla?
I know, he scored away at Maribor a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah, they don't count, they're shite. But it's since...
Well, they do, because I read it and they said we scored 7, so I think they all counted.
But you know what I mean? Like, he's been proper struggling since that miss. And so anything like this, the goal at Maribor and now this one as well, they'll all count, and hopefully our attack starts to click a little bit better, because it is just, we all know we're good attacking, it's just not clicking. A lot of time that is confidence. I mean, I don't know how much all this like is going and running all that bollocks, but confidence does help, because you don't have to, you're not second guessing yourself. But I mean, as soon as the player starts doing that, as soon as players are start thinking about what they're doing, then they're not doing the right thing. But when it clicks, they all just know what to do. They know where the mates are, and it just happens. And goals do breed that. So, yeah, it'll be great for him.
Do you know what, right? Last year, I think it was, I had I'll say discussion, and put it politely, with one of the main stat heads on one of the other pods, and he said there's no such thing as confidence in football. And I was just like, right, firstly, that just sums up that you've never played football before, obviously, and it's because it can't be quantified on a spreadsheet, because you can't see it in the amount of runs you've done or the amount of sprints or whatever. They don't understand the importance of confidence.
Yep.
And it is huge. It is huge. Like Matt just said there, you overthink things. When you're confident, you'll try a volley rather than bring it down and have another touch, or you'll lay it off to someone when you're not confident. Like Harry Kane will shoot from anywhere at the moment because he's just on cloud now, whereas Firmino is probably likely to lay it off because he's been struggling a little bit. Confidence is massive. And as soon as that first goal went in, it was almost like you had 50,000 people in the ground just to take a big sigh of relief. And then the whole game changed then. Confidence is huge in football. And anyone who doesn't think it, just reads too many spreadsheets.
Yeah, well, you know what? You brought me nicely onto this next goal, because if you don't think confidence is part of the game, I don't know. I don't really want to talk to you. The thing about it is, like, not even the tour goal. If you go back to like Clavin for the first 15 minutes, I don't know what he was on. Like he must have had about 4 or 5 points in the fucking players' lounge, not thinking he was playing, and then got called at the last minute because he was all over the shop. But Grizz, the tour goal, that's a confidence strike. That's one where if we're at nil all or maybe 1-0, you know, that's one where he probably looks the player out wide or turn back and try progress the play. But when Alan gets that out of his feet and it's past the goalkeeper before he even reacts, it's hitting the back of the net, isn't it?
It's a very good example. It's a very good example of confidence. You're right. After 2-0 up, I think that was probably we started coasting. We started playing the football that we know we can play, that we have played sort of even this season. Do you know, suddenly, you know, it all came flowing back, and that was a confident. It was very similar strike to the one he scored last game of the season, versus Middlesbrough. Yeah, you know, just actually, it was exactly the same, near enough, same corner, everything, pure sheer power. I mean, I didn't, you know, he grew into that game, didn't he? That first half, as you said, Clavin, him, there was especially that left side was just non-existent for us. It was poor, but in that second half, everyone's, you know, Henderson's passes were sort of very passive, and, you know, what people criticize him for, sideways and backwards passing. Everyone was playing the cautious pass, and that's down to our confidence as a team again, as Ian says. But it was just very, very low. Everyone was taking the extra touch, an extra second to think about what they were doing. second half it was more instinctive. I think Klopp definitely probably gave them that, instilled that confidence, like, listen, let's step it up now and just take these risks. And we were taking those risks. And that was a pretty handy move, actually. It was one of those picture book goals from us as well. It was brilliant. It was a good little move, and a tremendous finish from Gini, and he scores again at home.
Yeah, well, as well, not just that, the pass before it from Emre, he had the easy pass outside him, which was Milner, or Millie, as Ian likes to call him, down the right. And
I do not like to call him Millie. I'm not having that.
Yeah, Ian likes to call him Millie, and he likes to call the other fella Studge.
Studge, yeah, Studge, Millie.
Fucking wankers.
So he had the easy pass, which a lot of people would have gone for, but because of the confidence, he played it into Salah's feet. And Salah actually had someone on him, and there was another person in between them, just to the right. It was a lot more difficult pass, but it was the right pass, and he went for it because of the confidence. I don't know if that's just because we're 2-0 up, but whatever it is, he went for that pass, and it was the right thing to do, and it led to the goal. And it's little things like, because he broke the line of the, because they had two banks of four. He broke that first bank, and that's everything that caused the goal.
It's definitely down. It's definitely down to confidence, but it's the sort of thing you'd like to see us do when we are 1-0 or 1-1, because that's the game changing sort of moment. Exactly. You know, teams are expecting you, if you're low in confidence or if you haven't got the courage to play it, they're expecting that ball to go out wide and for it to be thrown in the box. But the pass to Salah is the sort of one you want to see all game, regardless of what score it is. Have that confidence in yourself and be that little bit different. But look, lads, it was 3-0. It's a good win. It's the sort of win that, you know, a lot of people went over the top last week about Spurs, probably us included. We absolutely slaughtered players here last week. This week we're giving them credit. You don't go too over the top. It is only Huddersfield, but it's a good win. It's the sort of win where you have to put them away, and we did. So we go on Maribor on Wednesday and stuff like that. But quickly, I just wanted to ask you, Ian, I'll come to you first. Who was your man of the match?
I'd probably go with Henderson for the second half performance. He'd done a lot of it goes unnoticed, but he was pointing people around the pitch, and he tells Firmino where to pull off for the first goal. And I think he gets a lot of, myself included, give him a bit of shit last week, but I don't think there was any real outstanding performances, to be honest. Everyone was solid, but I'd just give it to him just for, he played a couple of really nice long passes that deserved better, you know what I mean? So I'd go for Henderson for me.
No problem. Chris, who would you go for?
Yeah, on Twitter, I did say Henderson and Milner, but since then, I'm going to narrow it down to Milner. I did actually think, without being spectacular, he kept us going. And in games like this, you need someone just to keep it going, ticking. And I actually thought he was quite sort of, you know, senior role. He is a senior player, but he sort of took responsibility. And what Ian's saying about Hendo directing players, I saw Milner do a lot of that. It was nothing spectacular. You could make a case for Joe Gomez, who was solid without being spectacular again. I mean, there were, you know, Moreno was decent, didn't put a foot wrong again. But I think James Milner, just sort of for that experience, and he kept us going. Even though we were not playing brilliant, he just sort of kept the ball ticking over and kept trying to make spaces. And I love the way he covers players. You know, he's a very underrated, his intelligence is very underrated.
Yeah, so he's a very smart player, isn't he? Very smart.
So Millie for me.
Millie for you, Millie. You got me lovely there. So no votes for Studge so far, Ian, unfortunately. So Ian, you've gone with Henderson. Grizz, you've gone with Millie. Matt, who are you
Matt's
having?
Matt's going for Emery for that pass, aren't you, Matt?
Well, you pretty much talked about every other player on the pitch, so...
whatever Chris said there was Ian's opinion.
I think the whole team was just... No one was really excellent. The whole team was just good. Do you know what I mean? So it's just picking the best out the good. It's for me, between Gomez and Milner, so I'm going to stick with Milner, yeah. Same as Grizz.
No worries. I'm going for Moreno, simply for guiding a clearly drunk Ragnar Klavan through the game.
Fair shout.
Yeah. Lads, I have to touch on this because the chaps had a hard week, and no, I'm not talking about Ian. It's Dejan Lovren. you know, absolutely slaughtered last week. A lot of talk about him from anyone. Just pick somebody, and they've all spoken about him. Words of encouragement from Klopp and defended his player throughout the week. He gets named in the team and goes out to warm up and comes back in, and he can't play, leading to Clavin coming on. But I don't know. This situation has me a little bit confused, to be honest with you. You know, ability-wise, people question him, but I think this is maybe down to, it may be mental. It may be clearly mental as to what's going on. Ian, you touched on it last week about Lovren. I think you may have touched on his personal life and stuff going on there, but could this be having a bigger effect on him than we actually give a credit for?
Yeah, of course. I said that last week. I think he's already, like, going through hell, do you know what I mean, mentally. And the thing with Lovren is, he's a very, very nice man. Do you know what I mean? He's one of the only players who will stop and sign at autographs for 2 hours. He come from, like, he was a refugee when he came over the country, so he's got a lot of time for people. And I think he feels things a lot more than a lot of other players. You know, some players are just robotic and they just crack on, they earn a living, they do what they've got to do and they get on with it. I do think he wears his heart on his sleeve a lot, Lovren, to his detriment sometimes, obviously. But yeah, I do think he's struggling, and I think he's very, if he hasn't already had some sort of mental breakdown, I don't think he's very far away from doing it, because, like I touched on last week, if your marriage breaks down and you're having issues with seeing your kids and all of that, it is crippling. Trust me, it's crippling. And now he's got to deal with that, as well as 10 million Liverpool fans around the world saying he's shit. And he's making mistake after mistake, because, and then I can guarantee you that no one on that pitch wants to do better than Dejan Lovren. No one. But he's trying too hard, and his ability level is already not as high as someone else's. So he can't afford to slip even 5%, Lovren. And like I said to you just before we started recording this, and you've just touched on a bit there, and I'll say it before Grizz pretends it's his idea. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't even injured pre-game, if he's just gone out and he's just not mentally right at the moment. You know, I would not be surprised if even Klopp's had a look at him and thought, no. Do you know what I mean? I'm back, because Klopp deserves a lot of credit for how much he's back on Lovren, because many others wouldn't. Could you imagine Mourinho? He'd have fucking hung him out to dry months ago, but Klopp's backed him. Rightly or wrongly, he's backed them continuously. And I think there's a good possibility that he's seen him in the warm-up or whatever and just thought, no, you've got to be cruel to be kind sometimes. You know what I mean?
Did anyone see him? Did anyone see him limp or anything like that?
No, nothing. I mean, I don't even know what the injury's supposed to be, but I would be very surprised if it isn't more of a mental thing, to be honest.
Well, they said groin, didn't they? And then they said muscle strain. So Klopp was slightly unsure. Yeah,
I mean, they can say whatever, can't they? It doesn't mean shit. But
yeah, exactly.
I just think he needs to spell out the firing line. Me, I can't see him playing for Liverpool after this season anyway. But I do genuinely feel for him. When you take the football side out of it, as a human being, he's a really nice man. Now, I know people turn around and say, well, I don't give a fuck what type of person he is. I just want to win games. That's all well and good. But there's a human aspect of football as well. These are human beings. And he's going through an awful lot of stuff in his private life. And sometimes people need to take that into account. And I understand that a lot of people on Twitter and that are like 17-year-old lads who haven't got a clue about life. They haven't lived through anything and they don't understand how it can affect you. Do you know what I mean? From day to day. And I'm speaking from experience and say, it can really kill you off. So I've got an awful lot of respect for him for trying to fight through it, but there comes a point when you've just got to take him out of the firing line.
Yeah, no, because, you see, after the game last Sunday, I was furious with Lovren. I have to be honest, absolutely furious. And not only him, a couple of other people, but when this week went on and all the talk about him, I thought, you know, he's going to get picked. He's definitely going to get picked here. And then when I was actually driving, to get back home for the game yesterday, and I heard there's been a late change and it was Lovren. And I actually went back and looked at the goals against Spurs, and it was just his body language after the goal, it was as if he was talking to himself. It was as if everything was getting on the back of him, you know, into his head. And I was the same as you. I immediately thought his bottle is gone. There's something gone here, you know, in a warm-up where he's, something's happened, you know, and it made me think this could be more mental. But Grizz, if it is a case of, you know, he's mentally scarred by something or there's something going on in his private life that it's getting the better of him at the moment, what do you think is best for him? Does he keep playing or does he need a little bit of time off or is it all down? Do you take each character as they come? Is it different for each person?
It's very much different for each person. But, you know, I'm going to give Ian's opinions again. But yeah, basically...
It's like echo in here.
Look. Dejan Lovren is a top, top guy, man. He has gone through shitloads. Look, I read during the week and I was honest to God, it really... Because, look, we all fumed, we all pissed off with Lovren. But when I read shit about death threats and his kids being kidnapped, you know, that really, really saddened me. Because at the end of the day, there is a human aspect. And this guy doesn't... Look, A, he doesn't ask to be picked, right? It has to come down to Klopp. Klopp picks him. If he's out of his depth, the lad, look, that's Klopp needs to see that. I think he's gone, Gav. I think he's mentally gone. And when you're in that state, you have to get away. It's like with anything. You've got to get away from it and have a small break, a little break. He needs to get away from football. We don't know what his personal situation is like with regards to his family, whatever. Maybe spend time with his close ones. You know, I'm one of the conspiracy theorists. I don't think there was an injury. I think there has been abuse from the fans at the ground, and it's got to him again. And maybe Klopp has seen something, or Lovren's just said, look, I won't be able to handle it. I can't handle it. In my opinion, again, I don't think Klopp should have picked him, because look, there's nothing wrong with dropping a player who's had a bad game. It's part and parcel of football. I don't think it was right maybe for Klopp to put him back in the firing line after such a bad performance and after hauling off after 30 minutes. If he just had a 90-minute bad game and he was selected again, that could be understandable. But when you've hauled off someone for the first time in your bloody career, because we know Klopp doesn't make any substitutions, early substitutions, but if you've played that bad for Klopp to take you off after 30 minutes, you must have been very bad. And yeah, on top of that, your Dejan Lovren, who's not very, it seems he's not very stable, mentally stable as well at the moment. You know, I just thought it was a bad, bad showing all around. That incident sort of, you know, didn't go down well with me. I think he's gone. I think he needs time out, break. I think, you know, the quicker Klein can get back into the team, then Gomez can slot into next to Matip. If we're going to play four, you never know. We might start playing this three. But yeah, I don't know, man. I can't see him. Definitely not beyond the season. I just don't know how many more times he's going to get picked in the first team when he's fit now. Even
can I just say, you know, the reason why he might get picked again is because of how bad Clavin was.
Mm. And but that's what I'm saying.
I think maybe Klopp's thought, as bad as Lovren is at the minute and where his head's at.
But that's why I'm dying for Klein to come back.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, it's not even that. He might need to bite the bullet, and he might need to put Trent in a right back and say, look, Trent and Gomez are going to have to do something there because I'm not playing Clavin. I will come to you. And the reason I got thinking about this all week was because when you looked at last Sunday and, you know, he's hauled him off because he's obviously seen a fella having an absolute mare of a game. The chances are he's spoken to him. There could be personal issues there, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to have to back this player, put him in again because he wants to play again. And it's backfired on him. Or he just backs Lovren because he likes Lovren. But something that came into my head as well about the mental thing was the season before last, Liverpool played away to Southampton. And there seemed to be no issue, and Lovren went off at half-time. And the reason came out was because he was basically being affected by the crowd and the abuse he was taking from the crowd. So I don't know if he's mentally the strongest guy in the world, but when it comes down to this situation, it might be an injury, it may be, but if it's what we all suspect and his head is gone, would you be up for giving them, you know, like, we have an international break next week, so it, giving them a week off and just saying, go away for a week, and like Grizz said, be with close family, or do you have to go with Lovren if he wants to? If you, what I'm trying to say is, do you go with what Lovren is telling you? And it could be, I want to play football, or do you go with your gut instinct and go, listen, he wants to play, but it's clearly not happening. That's what I'm trying to ask you.
Firstly, mate, you don't tell him to go away with his family because they fucked off on him, lad.
No, I mean, listen.
What I think about Lovren, I think
Matt, you should be lucky. There was a question at the end of it.
I know. Yeah, you fucking take your time getting there,
money. No, because it's not affected me this week, but it's something that really got me thinking deeply about it. Let me answer that. No, I'm not going to let you answer, because don't give me Ian's opinion now.
Come back to me, Gav.
No, I've got this. So, like, I reckon he's a very, very proud man. So he will be saying to Klopp, I'm ready. Put me back in. I'm fine. And a lot of the time, when it is affecting people, they're not the ones who will see it. It's other people who will see it. So Klopp needs to be brave there and go, you know what? You're not me. You're not fine. You're coming out, and maybe he did. I don't know about all these conspiracy theories, but maybe he did see it, and that's why he's pulled him. But I reckon Dejan's the type of guy who keeps saying he's okay. You've seen him. After one good performance, he comes out talking like he's Baresi. Do you know what I mean? He's that type of guy. He's very confident in himself.
I think that's fake, Matt. I think he's insecure.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Do you know what? Can I just say, right?
He'll be faking it to Klopp as well.
Speaking from someone. Sorry, mate. I've suffered from mental illness the last 18 months. That's, you know what I mean? People who know me know that. I don't even think you're lying when you tell people you're okay. I think you want to believe that you're okay that much that you portray it outwardly. Do you know what I mean? You're like, yeah, I'm fine.
That's what I mean.
I'm fine.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to get at.
You're not fine at all.
Is he telling Klopp that and Klopp believed him and then Klopp decided afterwards,
I think he's a proud man. And he doesn't want to say, no, I'm struggling, you know. He wants to be fine, like Ian's saying there, and that is what's happening. But now it might actually be Klopp seeing it and going, he needs 2-3 weeks off. And I'll give it him, maybe even longer. We gave it to, remember we've done it with Sterling in the January of 13-14? Because he played the whole season, he was mentally fatigued.
Yeah, he went to Jamaica, didn't he?
That was it, yeah. And we took him out, sent him away.
Matt was there as well, yeah.
Yeah, soldier boy.
He got Jamaica. Jesus, we bought Van Dijk to fucking Blackpool. The other cunt got Jamaica.
But it does work. Do you know what I mean? I mean, football is a stressful game. As much as we all want to sit here and go, oh, he's on 100,000 a week. It means fuck all, mate. It means every single day, millions of people are watching your every single move, criticising your every move.
Doesn't.
It gets to you. Fucking Boston does. I'm not arsed. I don't want him near our team, really. But to say it doesn't affect him, that's bullshit. So yeah, I would give him 3-4 weeks off. We've clad him shite, I know. But I would put Gomez in there because he's doing all right. And I'd probably put, rather than Trent, I'd put Milner at the back because he knows how to protect him.
That's a shout.
You're probably right. Like, Ferguson was famous for it with Ronaldo. He used to send Ronaldo off on a mid-season break most years. And in around international breaks and stuff like that. But look, as much as we criticise the guy and, you know, we all have our views on him. If the chap's having a hard time, all you can do is wish him the best. And if a break is what's needed, that's what's needed, you know. But look, two questions to finish off with. One is from a friend of ours, Ben. And Ben wanted to know, if everyone is fit, he basically wanted to know what midfield stroke forward you would play. Grizz, I'll let you go first. Everyone is fit, and I want you to pick the front six.
The front six. Okay, yeah. So midfield.
This should be fun. Chris is great with
how
numbers.
Long the week off?
Now, front the six, only thing is, Chris, 12. if you want, I'll keep a note.
Can you let you know how many players you pick. Can you count with me?
Right? Oh, absolutely.
No one can count with
you. I'll be counting for you, not with you.
Good man. All right. So basically, look, I think I'd go Emre and Ginny holding. I'd play 4-2-3-1.
No one cares. Just give us your six.
I have to fucking contextualize it, don't I? Is that
Ooh.
Matt, is that one? So I can't just name you a six.
He's gone big.
All right.
He's been massive his whole life.
Gav,
yeah.
You carry on counting. They always do this, try to put me off numbers. All right, so I've got Emre and Ginny. Emre and Ginny, and then I'd go Salah, Phil, Mane, Bobby.
Okay, fair enough. That's six. Well done. You like your childhood crush there, Carl Vorderman, with all the numbers. Fair play to you. Matt, I'll come to you next. What's your front six?
Same, just slightly different setup with more of a 4-2-2-2 with Mane and Salah up front, Bobby and Coutinho behind. But I'm happy for Salah and Bobby to switch as well. And then Genie and Chan as well at the back.
Okay, cool, yeah. Ian, who are you going with?
I'd stay 4-3-3.
Mm-hmm.
And Emre Can wouldn't start a game for Liverpool again for me until he signs a new contract. I don't care how much I like him. He can fuck off. So I would go Henderson, who neither of them chose, and he's the captain, so they're both mental because he's going to play. So Henderson...
it's who you'd
pick, innit? So start again, son.
Well, I'd pick Henderson because he's the captain.
Right, that's
so
right.
I'd go
you'd pick
Henderson, Wijnaldum, Lallana, and then the front three would be Mane, Salah on the wings, and Bobby up the middle.
So where's Coutinho?
Now, Phil! Flop.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Phil.
How are you counting there, lad?
I'm just thinking of Lallana. See, because you're not going to play Lallana and Coutinho in the same midfield three. You just can't.
That's why I've gone for it, yeah. If you've gone for the dive...
But Lallana will start. So, yeah, he will change the... He will change the formation, yeah.
I'd go with Wijnaldum, Lallana, Coutinho, Mane, Salah, Firmino.
No, I'm
just telling you. I would. I'd play Wijnaldum deeper to the tree with Lallana and Coutinho.
I'd go
with the front three as well. Either am I, really. I'm only asking because I like Ben.
Yeah, no, Ginny playing as a six. I didn't want to talk about...
Like Tommy Gunn.
That's internet. Poor internet, lads.
You got DJ Selector on.
Poor internet, Matt. That's what your internet. 20
beatboxing, Grizz.
20 pence at the meter there, Grizz.
Yeah, it's running low, guys. Bear with me. All right. But no, I did contemplate Ginny at the six. I thought we could discuss that at some point. Ginny as the deepest laying midfielder.
Every week you do this where something was meant to go, do you know what? I was actually hoping we could discuss this. And before the pod, I'd say, do you want to discuss anything? No.
Right, I'm making the agenda for next week. Fuck you, Zool.
All right, no problem. Last question, lads. Superpowers. This is what we're on to this week. Ian, I'm going to come to you first. If you can have one superpower, what would it be? And nothing from Batman can be included because he's not a superhero and didn't have any superpowers.
Of course he did.
He didn't.
He just had massive amounts of wedge.
Yeah.
He couldn't fly it on. Right. I've got my superpower, but I did think temporarily about I would like to be able to change race whenever I wanted, just so I could be black and call people jive turkeys, because I love that. And a white person can't call people jive turkey because they look strange.
This sounds like trouble at the end of this. Go on.
No. So, and then I changed that, and I thought, nah, it's not really a superpower, giving people abuse. So I would go with, I would like to be able to alter time. And by that, I don't mean, like, go back 100 years. I mean, if I could just go back
last
5 minutes.
If you pulled the clock back an hour.
If I could alter 5 minutes, forward or back, whatever, I reckon that would be an awesome special talent, special power. So. Really? And my name would be fucking Time Man or something.
Time Man. Yeah, you've really thought that one through.
Yeah, well, I didn't think the name through. But I just think of all the shit you can have if you could just go back 5 minutes and do something again.
Well, Well, you see, the thing is, you ordered takeaway food tonight, and it took about 3 hours to get there. So
you still sat there because Grizz can't count to six.
Yeah, I know, but you need to go back more than 5 minutes. You need to go back 3 hours.
Yeah, but I recognize my deficiency, and I asked the hostess with the mostest to count for me.
You've got more than one deficiency, but yeah, I think if you could go back in 5 minute intervals, just think you'd be sound. Nothing bad had ever happened to you. Well, unless you got like AIDS or something. But even then, you could go back 5 minutes before you shagged the brass or whatever it was that gave it.
You don't find out like five minutes after you shagged it.
I've got AIDS.
I know your bell end doesn't start flashing or something like that.
Mate, some of the birds I've been with, trust me, you'd know within 5 minutes.
Within 5 minutes.
They all wear beacons on the top of their head, did he?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Right. Grizz, superhero time. I know you consider yourself a bit of superpower be?
Well, do you know, mine's quite a serious one. Mine's quite a thoughtful one. Mine's one of those that, you know, I'd love to be Ian's the time man, did he say, yeah? In that case, I'd be the healing man. I'd love to be able to heal people, cure people. And, you know, one of the aspects I'd like to cure people and heal people of, apart from the major diseases and the cancers of the nasty cancers and Ian's AIDS and all that shit, your STDs, right, that he's got, right? What I'd like to cure is people's anger and heal people's anger. Because you know how much venom there is on social media at the moment and Twitter and all these people that are going mad, absolutely mental over people's opinions and views and FSG out. You know, these people, there's a lot of anger out there.
Didn't you offer someone out on Periscope?
That's right. Yeah. No. Periscope.
Yeah, Grizz is one of the most angry people I know. So he wants to cure himself.
Grizz, you know that's Grizz, about. Listen.
Sorry, guys. Grizz. I actually think you have this power already. And the way you have it is, don't open your mouth. And then there'll be no hate in this world because you caused most of it.
I thought you were going to say you're a beatbox, man.
Guys, you guys are my brothers. Shut up. You lot know that I'm not an angry person. That's all an act. And if I ever come across angry on Twitter, I ignore me and laugh it off. Come on, you're supposed to be preaching that kind of vibe, not probably making it worse for me. So, yeah, there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of venom in the world. I'd just like.
What would your name be, Chris? What would your superhero name be?
Angry man?
No, the healer.
The healer?
Healer man.
Healer.
Instead
of
you, man, I'll be
Heal
Man.
That's
the
one. Oh,
man. Tune and everything. I just thought of you in this little hut. And, you know, you're just putting heels on shoes while people are going in to do their big shot.
Yeah. But, he asked for it and he gets the wrong one.
Heal Man. Wait, that's a cracker. Yeah. That's a cracker, Heal Man.
Okay.
Carry on.
Yeah, and don't ever sing that theme tune to me again.
Heal Man.
What's your superpower, man?
Right. I would have power to float an inch above the seat that you're sitting on. Because, hear me out, I spend a lot of time on planes. And honestly, mate, my arse at the end of every single journey, I'm constantly pulling my fucking bockos out my arse, down my legs, honestly, all over the place. So if I could just float an inch above that seat, my life would be heaven. Absolutely. Even now, like I'm sitting, it's 35 degrees out here, it's 1 a.m, and honestly, I'm soaked through to downstairs. My gooch is a mess. I need airflow around my balls, my arsehole.
You know what you need to do? You need to take your trousers down in an open field, maybe a golf course, and just relax.
Do you know what, though? It sounds like a job for Heal Man, that. Heal Man. Solve his hot gooch, Grizz.
I'm not having fucking Grizz with my gooch.
I can hear you, Gav. Matt, I'm coming over. When are we going over?
Grizz.
Don't worry.
I've got some
healing tips for Matt, all right? Trust me.
Grizz can solve your hatred of your sweaty regions.
He'll have me rubbing frankincense.
You know what? You're laughing there, but he will. He's Asian. You think Grizz has never dealt with a hot ass before? The amount of curry he eats. Yeah, he'll sort you right out, honestly.
Nah, I need airflow, mate. It's a different world.
Your superpowers are dog shit. You basically just don't want sweaty nuts. And he wants to fucking stop shouting at people. They're the two shittest fucking...
Mine's healing people, you fuck. It's not about shouting, stop it. You're getting me angry.
Ian, I wouldn't agree with you until you come out.
He'll start beatboxing in a sec. Heel man.
Yeah, I ruined it with time, man. But do you reckon Gav's special power is so we can go on the big rides at Alton Towers? He just wants to grow 4 inches.
Yeah, I just want to be stretched. That's it. No.
He gets Chris to put some big heels on his shoes and then he's ready.
Seriously,
I
met.
I could help that.
Give us them 2 inches there, Chris.
Yeah, when I went to do my big shop, I'll come back out and I'm 6 inches taller.
What's happening me already on a private? Look, hey, Chris.
Heel man. Heel man. Heel man is just there to fix me. The superpower has to be flying, doesn't it? It has to be.
Why?
Mate, you're not flying.
I just thought you can go fucking anywhere you want to. You know what I mean? It's flying.
We can go anywhere. For me, just go to the airport.
Flying would be lovely.
It's been done to death. I was thinking out the box.
Yeah, but the thing is...
I was thinking about my own box.
But what are the chances of seeing Heel Man advertisements now on the telly in the next 6 months?
Hey, listen, I've got fucking exclusivity to that, man.
Just fucking, he has it in his head now and he's going to go for it.
Channel,
I know he is.
Channel 798 on Sky. Fucking Chris comes on.
The
only problem is they'll have to dub Grizz at the end. You know the way you have
listen,
to call
everyone,
it?
Listen, everyone. Shall I tell you the beauty? Gav, come here, Gav. The beauty of my superpower is everyone in some form or another, aspect or another, needs healing. So there's always a job for me, lads. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
that's the beauty of my superpower. Eventually.
Why don't you just become a barber? Everyone needs a barber.
Or a funeral director.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. No, but they wouldn't need
I'm, not, I'm not thinking about anyone else but myself. Yeah, my superpower.
Grizz, midwife, which are healing hands. You'd be amazing.
Healing hands. What a tune that is. That'd be my opening tune. Reacher.
If you do the ad.
Healing. Or would it be Heelman? We've got a choice there, lads.
But when you do the ads and you're on the telly and you know the way it says, just call and you give the phone number, there's no way you're remembering that phone number. So we'll have to dub somebody in on top of you. Who would you dub in? And I actually won't ask you, Grizz. Ian, who would you dub in on top of Grizz's, on top of the picture of Grizz to call out the phone number?
Joe Pasquale, probably. But you know the way like they shine like a bat sign in the sky for Batman, yeah. Obviously. For Grizz, what would you shine in the air? Like a fucking big leg of chicken or something?
massive wheelbarrow full of rice.
A massive naan bread.
You racist fuckers. Look at that. Naan, bread and rice, huh?
That's all you'd ever fucking post pictures of.
It could have been anything. It could have been a full English. It could have been my full English, right? But you didn't go there, did
you? I've seen your...
I joined the Mercedes sign into the night sky for Grizz.
Yeah, because then his dad will come.
I think that's the shape, for this week.
Put the shape of his dad's head around it. You know what I mean? And, that's what we'll probably go for. Well, Heel Man, fuck off. Listen, that's the end of the show. Episode 9, back 4. I don't even know where that went. Should be out later on this evening. Keep an eye out. Matt, Ian and Heel Man, thanks a million for joining me tonight. Yeah, that's been good. Talk to you next Sunday. Over and out.